Welcome to the Building Stories podcast series. My name is Amy Barnes, and I'll be your host as we explore some of Ontario's built heritage. This series will include 15 podcasts in total, so if you enjoyed today's show, be sure to check out some of the others. Each one is going to be different, because the truth is, each building has a different past, and each building has a different story to tell us. So without further ado, let's get started on today's topic. Today we head to one of my favorite regions in Ontario, and for those wine lovers out there, probably one of their favorites too. Within the Niagara Escarpment in southwestern Ontario, we will focus in on the city of Thorold. It has numerous historical landmarks and has been witness to many historical events that make the region an interesting place for tourists, historians, and locals alike. Not only is the famous Welland Canal located there, it was also an important battle site in the War of 1812, as the Battle of Beaver Dams took place in present-day Thorold. But the building we're going to talk about today was constructed long after these historic events took place, yet secured its place in the regional history just the same. The Kiefer House, or the Kiefer Mansion, was also known to many as Maplehurst because of its years as a chronic care facility. Built by Mr. Hugh Kiefer in 1886, the building took just over 1 year to construct. An impressive feat for such a large building at that time. The house was built atop one of the highest points in Thorold and therefore commands one of the most spectacular views around. Now, this beautiful and elaborate building would not have been cheap to construct. It is reported that the stones alone cost $30,000 in 1885. It is a regional landmark and tells the story of the Kiefer family, who are considered an important family in the Niagara region. In the end, the mansion would only serve the Kiefer family as a home for 8 years, as John and Hugh Kiefer would see their fortunes dwindle. When they could no longer afford the property tax on the mansion, it was repossessed in 1894. Now, this sad aspect of the story certainly does not take away from the grandeur of the building, as it would continue to be used in the following years. I had the chance to interview Phil Ritchie, who is president of Kiefer Mansion Inc. and currently lives on the top story of the mansion. I asked Phil to start by explaining a little bit about the history of the building.
Well, it was built by John and his son Hugh Kiefer, and John was a direct descendant, son of George Kiefer, who was the patriarch of the family here in Canada, who walked here from New Jersey as part of the UEL experience in 1793 with his brother. So the family, basically by the second generation, the log cabin was looking a little bit long in the tooth. It was a significant log cabin sitting on the front lawn. It stood there for almost 100 years, 90-odd years. And John, who had inherited the property from his father, and his son agreed to build a new home, Hugh. And Hugh was sort of an adventuring businessman, maybe. You know, he had business interests out in Vancouver. There's a Kiefer Street in Vancouver named after Hugh Kiefer. He had quarries and milling operations. Actually, we have a note that he met Sitting Bull. On the open plains, that must have been quite an experience. Basically built this extraordinary home, which was reputed to be one of the fanciest homes opened that season in 1886, and between Rochester and Toronto, and it had the original Harris hot water system, and all stone, and a widow's walk, and fancy gardens, and, you know, garages and sheds outside, and so forth. And but the family only held on to it for about 7 years or so. Then it sort of bumped along as a rooming house and a rental house until it transitioned into minor surgeries, babies and tonsils, in the 20s.
It is worthwhile to stop here and expand on some of the years it served as a medical institution. In 1934, it was purchased by a nurse named Mary J. Britton for just over $10,000. It was while she lived there that she converted the house into rooms for a maternity hospital. When she defaulted on her mortgage 2 years later, the superintendent of the hospital, Florence Stevenson, bought it at an auction for a mere $3,500. The building continued to operate as a minor surgery hospital for many years afterwards. In 1946, it even saw the birth of triplets. It passed hands in 1953 and again in 1973. From 1973 until its closure in March of 1999, the building operated as a chronic care facility until it was forced to close because of provincial restructuring. When the owners tried to get a demolition permit, the city of Thorold intervened and purchased the property. The next layer of life brings us to where we are today. In 2002, the city of Thorold entered a 30-year lease agreement with Kiefer Development Limited as part of a downtown redevelopment project. As Phil told me, they had enough money to either buy it or renovate it. Luckily, they chose to renovate the space and rent it from the city. The whole thing really felt like a win-win for the city, for Heritage, and for Kiefer Developments, but Phil says he had a lot of support along the way. He wanted to acknowledge the city councilors, planning staff, and Pam Minns from Heritage Thorold, who were all helpful and worked with him to get a designation in place and bring the building up to a safety standard while not compromising the integrity of the space. Here's a little excerpt from my conversation with Phil when I asked him about the shape the house was in when he acquired it.
The building needed extensive, you know, restoration / renovation to try and take it to some sort of new use, and it was heavily institutionalized. But the building bones were in good shape in terms of stonework, foundation. Structurally, it was completely fine. But a lot of its heritage attributes, such as the interior trim, had been all painted. Steel doors were covering up, you know, beautiful old pocket doors. The windows were in serious disrepair. A lot of those elements were completely shot. And, you know, a lot of things were fortunately stored up in the attic. A lot of old original exterior doors and interior doors were kept there. So our process was more of a restoration, you know, refinishing of the building as much as a structure. There was no real structural issues. The deck fell off, massive deck fell off. It didn't need any tools either, just kind of fell off.
So were you able to use those pieces that were stored in the attic and
Yeah, the doors, and we found some trim, and we found matching hardware online. Thank goodness where the internet was, you know, in play. I don't know how you would have done something like this. Like, we did it, you know, 20 years ago. You would have been hard to source different things. But we found exact matches of some of the hardware and put it back together, yeah.
Restoration took 3.5 years since they did it on a part-time basis, and it was during this time that Phil made numerous discoveries on site. One was a stairway they found to the third floor that had been covered in by a closet. Others included lots of bits and pieces that were found in the joists, such as cigarette packs, old food wrappers, a pair of glasses, and other artifacts that really told the story of the day. Some of these can be found on display in the mansion today. I asked Phil to describe the house as it stands and one of his favorite things that he loves about the space.
Well, it's a 9,000 square foot, all stone, beautifully done, lots of woodwork inside. We refinished all the woodwork, stripped all the paint. It's a miserable job. You know, we've left in the original hot water system. Of course, the boiler's been changed, but the hot water heating is still there, and it's backed up by 4 furnaces with cooling as well to give rooms climate control. We put in 13 bathrooms. 30 beds were serviced by just 2 bathrooms in the original hospital format, so that would have been a busy place.
But you do operate as a B&B and as an event space and
right,
a place
right.
for weddings.
We have 6 rooms, and we are, B&B, of course. You have a great B&B experience, and we host weddings and dinners and so forth that folks want to have them. It's a private event. I love some of the views of the staircase and the woodwork. There's a spot where you can stand. You get both the upper floor and the lower floor in one sort of view, which I quite like. You know, it's a wonderful set of decks to sit on at night and see the canal, and the fountains and the grounds are getting nicer every year.
During the restoration, Phil used archives and photos where he could and tried to use original materials in order to get as much of it historically correct as possible. 6 photos of the exterior were consulted, but there was only 1 photo of the interior available. When they were in the midst of all this research, they found parts of the building had ended up in other cities entirely.
You know, a building that's been around that long and is that prominent, everybody that owned it, you know, sort of felt entitled to take a little piece of it home whenever they sold the thing or abandoned it. But some of the fireplace tiles, we found them in a house in Port Dalhousie. The owner was kind enough to invite us down. We took some pictures. And they're hand-painted tiles of the canal works being built, which is kind of really interesting. And they've been taken out of the fireplace. A lot of the overmantels are gone, unfortunately, except for one. We only have 1 original thing, we think, from the Kiefers of any size, and that's the fireplace poker we seem to have.
In the end, they realized that despite the willingness of the owner to return the tiles to the original space, the risk of breaking them or damaging them was too great, and they remained in place. This concept goes hand in hand with the philosophy Phil holds when it comes to restoration.
You know, one of my views of heritage restoration is that I tend to include the warts as part of the go-forward plan. So at the inn, as an example, in the dining room, you'll notice a couple of the window sills on the inside are all beat up. not because we couldn't have a carpenter fix that. It's just pine. We could have certainly replaced it and stained it. You would never know the difference. But that's where the beds would hit it over the years from the men's ward on that side of the hospital. And, you know, just like an interesting 80-year-old's face has got, you know, a crack here and a wart there and a dent there. That's part of the story of heritage, right? So to me, heritage isn't supposed to look perfect. It's supposed to have some dents.
Lastly, for anyone who searches Kiefer Mansion, you will no doubt find information about the mansion being haunted. There was even an episode on Creepy Canada about the Kiefer Mansion that I just had to ask Phil about. Now, Phil doesn't put much stock into that aspect of the folklore that surrounds the building, and it's not something they play up in their marketing, but he does acknowledge that the building does attract people who are interested in those stories.
The consensus from a lot of people is, especially the people that are sort of clairvoyant type folks that have come through over the years, is that there's extremely positive spirits in the building. But I remember I had one experience when I was just renovating. I was there late at night one night, and I would bring over sort of a six-pack of beer and a crowbar, and I would start demolishing. I wanted to do the demolition myself because, you know, you're picking away at something, and you don't want a gang going in there one day and just trashing something. So I would do it myself at nights. I was working full-time somewhere else. It's windy sort of night outside. I walked by a set of windows at the top of the second staircase and to the first staircase and on the second floor landing. And the windows, the way the wind was howling, you would have felt the windows should have been drawn out, but they were blown in, or blown in, but they were drawn out. It was just a strange, real strange feeling. And I got this really funny feeling that, you know, I wasn't alone in that joint. And it's the only time it's ever really happened to me. And I yelled at the house at a very deep, manly, half-drunk voice and said, listen, I don't mind sinking every nickel every hour I got into you, but any more weird stuff, and I am out of here. You can sit here and rot for all I care. And the running joke was the house listened and you know, smartened up like any good kid would when his father's gotten pushed too far. And that was the end of it. There was no more spooky from there. And it, you know, it was sort of a running joke. And I kept seeing the same rabbit all the time for 3 years. And I nicknamed him Hugh after Hugh Kiefer. And sort of when I was having off days, you can imagine $1 million renovation, $1.2 million or something stuck in the joint. Can have a lot of off days. You know, when I needed hope that I was on the right track, you know, I'd see Hugh. It was kind of a funny thing. But.
Well, there you have it. A snapshot of the history and stories behind Kiefer Mansion. If you are in the Niagara area, and if you're interested in history, then the Kiefer Inn can give you an authentic inn experience. You can get all the information on the various amenities the space has to offer on their website, which is www.kiefermansion.com. I would like to thank Phil Ritchie for taking the time to speak with me about the Kiefer Mansion. Congratulations on the restoration and continued success of the inn. The Building Stories podcast series could not have been made possible without our sponsors, so a big thank you goes out to the Architecture Conservancy of Ontario, the Heritage Resource Centre at the University of Waterloo, the Centre for Community Mapping, the Computer Systems Group at the University of Waterloo, and the Government of Ontario. If you have any comments about today's show, we would love to hear from you. You can email the Building Stories team at info@buildingstories.co or send them a tweet at Building Stories, which is BLDG_stories. And of course, you can also find them on Facebook under the Building Stories Facebook page. These podcasts have been written, produced, and hosted by myself, Amy Barnes, and I'd like to take this last moment to thank you all for listening.